Ladies and gentlemen, Texans and Tejanos, you are tuned to the show that talks the talk and walks the walk. It's Pratt on Texas. Now, here's your host, Robert Pratt.
From the True Texan Studio, I'm Robert Pratt, and this is Pratt on Texas on a week I'd intended to take off, but you know how that goes. There's just too much news out there, my friends. I may have to take off a day or two this week, just finalizing things up as we return to the airwaves on Monday the 19th. If you've missed that, look up our new station, 98.7 FM, 1420 AM in Lubbock, and 96.1 FM in the big country in Abilene. Just visit PrattOnTexas.com. You can see all about that. Well, my friends, our Lone Star story of the day is it's looking as if next year's primary elections in Texas will indeed be delayed months due to the federal government's dragging feet on redistricting information, census data. The Senate has passed a bill to formalize such and put some schedules down. Also, a lot of gun bills flowed through committee, but constitutional carry did not, and much more from the Texas legislature. The Texas press is already proving my P. Bush versus Paxton prediction of last week to be correct. I'll share that with you and a lot more out of the, I guess for no short of another term, the political stack. It's pretty much all political. Border spiraling out of control, says Texas 23's Congressman Tony Gonzalez. He ought to know his district covers most of the border between Texas and Mexico. And just a lot of other news to get to as time allows, my friends. As always, it is a great day to be a Texan. By the way, today in Texas history, during the Revolution in 1836, it was this day. Well, if you're listening now, it's 12 April. 1836, Mexican forces under General Santa Anna captured Thompson's Ferry on the Brazos River between San Felipe de Austin and Fort Bend. As the Houston's army retreated eastward in the runaway scrape, a rear guard under Mosley Baker at San Felipe and Wiley Martin at Fort Bend sought to prevent the Mexican army from crossing the Brazos at Thompson's Ferry. Mexican Colonel Juan Almonte hailed the ferryman who was on the east bank and just tricked him. One of the old tricks of war. Don't worry. I mean, that sounds pretty bad. Remember, we tricked Mexican ships to coming ashore. Thus, we have horse marines in Texas and captured them. So this is just a little ferry that a guy pulls back and forth. The guy thought it was just somebody else who was wanting to get across. And they hid in some other Mexican military folks hid in the bushes. And then they jumped out and captured the ferry there. So, but again, that's a little embarrassing, but nothing compared to seizing entire naval vessels from the shore as the Texas Horse Marines did. By the way, in 1879, on the 12th of April, Wheeler County became the first organized county in the Texas Panhandle. That's right, Wheeler, oldest county up in the Panhandle. In 1984, President Reagan was in Dallas visiting construction workers at a construction site, which makes sense because that's where construction workers are. And in 1758, way back, almost 100 years before the Revolution, the oldest recorded private land grant in Texas took place. It involved a title dispute between Luis Antonio Menchaca and Andres Hernandez involving Menchaca's San Francisco Ranch in what's now Karnes and Wilson counties. All right, my friends, let's talk about the upcoming primary elections and delays. The federal government has decided, like almost everybody has to use, you know, COVID as an excuse for things. Trump was still going to try to get census data out to state legislatures early and as early as they could. And as soon as Biden's group took over, they said, we're not going to deliver it and we're not going to roll it out to some states earlier and others. We're just going to wait till, I think they said, the end of September. It's insanity. I mean, that's redistricting sometimes takes months of the legislature. But anyway, it looks like we're going to have delayed primaries. And we've talked about that before. Daniel Friend at the Texan.news did a great job writing this up in a piece about how the candidate filing window is going to be tightened. It looks like if the House goes along, the Senate approved Senate Bill 1822 last week from Senator Huffman, Joan Huffman of Houston. She's chairwoman of the Senate Jurisprudence and Redistricting Committees, that establishes new timetables for the primary elections and they've established several dependent upon when redistricting's completed. If you're looking at running for something or being up for re-election at whatever level, you need to be aware of these things. SB 1822 would establish three different timetables under which the primary election would be held depending on when new districts are redrawn. Current law gives a window of 30 days to candidates to file, in other words, the filing period for a position on the ballot. But in other words, it's not 30 days before the election. It's much before that, but it's a 30-day window of filing. This bill tightens that down to a two-week period for filing for only certain offices. The four offices that will be affected that'll be affected by redistricting: State Board of Education, State House, State Senate, and Federal Congressional Districts. And I guess other districts would remain the same, but that's interesting because local commissioners, court districts, all those things are subject to redistricting too by the local authority once the state does it. The state's just worried about the things they redistrict directly, House and Senate, State Board of Education, and Federal Congressional Districts. Here are the potential election dates. Again, the House has not agreed to this bill, but I bet they do, or they may change a little before it gets done. If the state's been able to handle redistricting completed from the legislature in special session or however it gets done, maybe the big three or whatever, the redistricting board, whatever, November 22nd, if they finish by, you know, around the time of Thanksgiving, the primary would continue on March 4th with the runoff on May 24th with a filing period of November 29th through December 13th. Now, that'll be a hard date to hit given when the legislature expects the material to be in. But I think if the Census Bureau gets it, if the Biden administration doesn't further drag feet on this, it could be done. If redistricting plans are completed by 3 January, in other words, all the way into the next year, 2022, you wouldn't have the primary till the 5th of April, a runoff in near the end of June, 21 June, and your candidate filing period would run 10 to 24 January. Now, if it gets pushed even further, and it may be, you know, you never know on these things. There are always lawsuits or all kinds of things. If redistricting plans are then completed by Valentine's Day, 14 February, and they didn't speculate beyond that date, but if it took, you know, all the way into January to do things, and you got it done before February 14th, the primary wouldn't be till the 24th of May, the runoff on the 26th of July, and the candidate filing period would be 21 February through March 7th. Daniel Friend. He writes, in the scenario that maps for different offices are completed under different deadlines, the filing periods for candidates would also come at different times. Now, that gets very confusing. Let me repeat that. In the scenario that maps for different offices are completed at different deadlines, in other words, state, Senate, House, or congressional districts, whatever, not each individual district, but the class of office, if they're done at different deadlines, filing periods for candidates would also come at different times, but the 2022 primary and runoff dates would fall at the latest time possible. Primary election for other offices that don't require redistricting, statewide offices and things will fall at the same time as the other elections. I mean, it'll all flow to whatever that date is, but it is funny. It implies there could be different filing periods. If new maps still hadn't been drawn after Valentine's Day, then the Secretary of State would set the dates for the filing period and elections for any offices that still have no redistricting plan in place. The Senate approved SB 1822 unanimously. The House has to approve it too, and they hadn't done so yet, but who knows? I'm sure they're working together in redistricting on this. Boy, we are looking at another one of these really messed up years, and it's because, well, when government does things, they don't get done. You know, just the absolute inefficiency from the Census Bureau. Back in a moment.
Pratt on Texas continues after this.
An important message about protecting life from Elizabeth and Dustin Burroughs.
Did you hear that 23 cities in Texas have now outlawed abortion? If they can do it, why hasn't Lubbock?
Well, Lubbock can. We have a chance to protect life on May 1st by becoming the next sanctuary city for the unborn.
I'm just shocked that Lubbock isn't already a sanctuary for life.
Well, that's why Senator Charles Perry, myself, and many pro-life advocates supported a City of Lubbock election on May 1st.
It seems we must defend the unborn in Lubbock, so what else can we do?
Well, we all have to show up to vote on May 1st. We have to pass this ordinance.
We in Lubbock know the value of life.
That's why Elizabeth and I are proud to join so many churches, pastors, and other people of faith in supporting this election on May 1st. You can learn more on my website at burrows4tx.com. That's burrows, the number 4tx.com. God bless you, God bless the unborn, and please go vote for life on May 1st. Political ad paid for by Burrows for Texas.
Brett believes, school or not, the only thing that'll stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Now, here's a good guy with a gun. Robert Pratt of Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back. Back to Under the Pink Dome in Austin. Also reported by the Texan.News, the Texas Senate Committee advanced a bunch of gun-related bills. Constitutional carry, though, was not included. I know that'll frost some people, but they did pass the Second Amendment sanctuary legislation and some other important bills that the Texas State Rifle Association, NRA, and others are behind. Senate Bill 18 repeals the provision in the Texas Disaster Act that lets the regulation that permits the regulation of firearms while a region or state's under disaster declaration. Good. SB 19, you notice the low numbers on these first three I'm going to give you. That means they had leadership backing early. SB 19 would prohibit state agencies and political subdivisions in Texas from entering into a contract with businesses that discriminate against firearm companies or organizations. That's great. We have the New York folks have put so much pressure on the financial industry that they've got banks and credit card companies and other people from doing business with people in the firearms business, and that's ridiculous. SB 20 would require hotels to permit guests to carry firearms to their private rooms. And they could require they be carried and concealed or in a case, but this is the problem now. You have a right, that's your domicile under the law, but what they're doing now, these lefty places, is saying, well, wait a minute, you can't, it's illegal for you to carry that through the lobby to your room, even though you're legal to have it in your room, thus disarming you. And it's just terrible. I just won't stay in a place like that. SB 513, known as the Texas Firearm Protection Act, makes Texas a Second Amendment sanctuary and would prohibit state and local government entities from enforcing new federal firearm regulations that are not adopted in Texas. SB 550 would amend current regulations so that licensed carry holders would be permitted to carry a handgun in any holster, not specifically a shoulder or belt holster. The law specifies those two types right now. And now Senator Springer, our good friend Drew, says that's no good. We need to let people choose the kind they want. I agree. SB 737 would establish a training and certification program for first responders that would allow them to carry weapons even in gun-free zones while actively engaged in their first responder duties. Good. SB 1253 would require the licensed carry program to remain in place even if constitutional or permitless carry becomes law, and that's important because we can't use the reciprocity with other states if we don't maintain the licensed carry program and keep your license to carry them. If you're going to travel, that's the only way you're able to carry in lots of other states is through that reciprocity agreement. If you got rid of the program in Texas, then all of a sudden it would disarm you traveling. So those bills were reported favorably. In other words, they passed the committee and the Senate, and they got to go to the full chamber. Then the House, Senate will send its stuff over to the House. We're getting down to crunch time in the legislature. There were some other similar gun bills in the House that made it through committee, but none have been through the entire House as a whole on the floor. The House Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee, it says, went a step further than the Senate and has thus far approved two constitutional carry bills, HB 1911 and HB 1927, that allows most people to carry a handgun without needing a license to carry. Representative Dustin Burroughs of Lubbock, the chair of the Calendars Committee, where the legislation will go through before it can be voted on by the whole House, has signed on to both of the constitutional carry bills. The problem you've got is the Senate did not advance that bill through the committee yet, and you don't know. I mean, if the Senate doesn't advance it, you know, all you're going to end up doing is some way to tack it on another bill, constitutional carry that's germane, and then get them to go along. But if they're decided against it, this time, that kind of thing could end over in the Senate. There were several of these bills filed in the Senate, but none of them have even been scheduled for a hearing by Senator Brian Hughes of Mineola, which means if you're about constitutional carry, there's one person you ought to be just pounding the heck out of with letters and emails, Twitter, social media, phone calls to their Capitol office, and, you know, even old faxes and letters, but emails, and that is Senator Brian Hughes. He's a good guy, but for some reason he must not be for constitutional carry because he's got it bottled up in committee in the Senate. The House is moving this stuff this time around. Chairman of Calendars, Burroughs, my state rep, is a co-signer of these things, so the odds are he'd get the thing out on a calendar, but the Senate may be where it's bottled up. Now, before you start, oh boy, it's good, and those guys are bad, I want you to know something. We did an extra time. We did quite a bit extra on Friday's show to catch up with legislative stuff. I want to explain to you again when it comes to these deadlines. Don't kid yourself and don't, look, not everybody down there is trying to lie to you all the time. Some of them lie all the time. Some of them probably just about like the rest of us. Once in a while they get in a pickle and they say something they shouldn't say. But I do want you to understand you should always, always be skeptical. And I'm not hitting on Burroughs right now because I know him personally and I think he's all for this constitutional carry. But I've told you how calendars can just stop a bill and nobody knows. There's really no transparency. You can't really peg what members stop the bill. It never gets on there. The big lie they do all the time is they put stuff like constitutional carry that they all want to say and campaign on being for, but really being against. They put it way down in the bottom of the House's daily agenda, knowing that in those last weeks, they never get to it, and it dies, and then they say, oh, well, the clock killed it. I'm sorry, the clock. I want to take this a step further. Go back and listen to Friday's show from the 9th of April. We did couple of extra segments just catching up on legislative news because so much had happened last week as we get to crunch time. Do not kid yourself. You need to understand that deals get struck too. For example, you could have people who are out publicly championing constitutional carry as committee chairmen in the House or bill co-authors or sponsors over in the House who have made a deal behind the scenes with Senator Hughes to not let it out of his committee in the Senate so that the bill can never pass, and then they can go out and tell everybody they were for it and they passed it and the damn Senate didn't get it done. Don't kid yourself. This kind of deal-making goes on. So I'm just... You know, some people get upset about this because they always want to be rah-rah for my guy, rah-rah my clan good, your clan bad. And that's just not true. It's just like science, everything else. You need to always be skeptical and understand that there's always horse trading that goes on and that it's always possible that even on something like this, the House guys decided, well, we're not getting blamed for it this time around for killing it. We're all going to be for it. And that could even be your speaker or it could just be some members. But somebody made a deal with somebody else in another part of the process to put a stop to it. You need to always ask those questions when you're talking to these people. Who made a deal to stop it? Did you make a deal to stop it? Are you involved or aware of a deal to stop it somewhere else? That's the kind of thing you need to ask people. The more you know about the process, the more expert you will be at trying to ferret out the truth or at least putting them on the line to answer properly. So... we'll see. The sanctuary, Second Amendment sanctuary stuff. Abbott said he wants that passed, but there's a prediction that there's going to be a clash over what that means. Senator Hall's Texas Farms Protection Act and its companion bill in the House by Toth of the Woodlands. None of those have had a hearing yet, and those are very important. So, yeah, they moved a lot of gun-related, Second Amendment-related bills last week, but there's still very key things that have not happened. And so you folks pay attention to your Texas State Rifle Association email alerts, your NRA email alerts, and do what they tell you. When they ask you to contact people, do so. All right. So there is who knew that this Texas Alliance for Life was going to go out of their way to once again prove that they are the sham pro-life organization and are exactly what I've long said they are. Yeah, the old sham Texas Alliance for Life now going after Lieutenant Governor and my Senator Charles Perry over a bill they don't like that pro-life people actually do. Back in a moment.
He gets so much in during the show, you can handle a short break. Pratt's back in a moment. If providing health insurance for yourself or your employees is costing more than you can afford, listen closely to this message.
I think one of the challenges that all small business owners are facing today is while they may be less than 50 employees, they're still competing with the big box companies that have full-blown benefit plans.
Michael Hurley of Hurley Benefit Services.
And with the price almost reaching the point of unaffordability, employers are looking for solutions. And my out-of-the-box thinking is providing a solution. We enrolled a local company, and we were able to save that employer one-third of his budget, which was equal to a little over $100,000 that he was paying prior to working with my agency.
Life Health Dental. With the innovative coverage offered by Hurley Benefit Services, you can have individual or group coverage that is a lot better, that costs a lot less. Hurley Benefit Services is independently owned, and they're online at hurleybenefits.com. H-U-R-L-E-Y benefits.com.
It's hard to explain why my greatest customer service experience wasn't at a luxury resort or private club, but was going to the dentist in Costa Rica, Dr. Silvia Zuniga of Dental Care. There are big Costa Rica practices which, while saving you big money, work just like they do here, herding patients through as fast as possible to increase billings. That's not how Dr. Silvia Zuniga works. Silvia's practice is purposely small and personal with the highest level of service and quality I've experienced for anything. My entire trip cost us less than half my lowest quote at home, including hotel for a week, restaurants, airfare for both of us, and local transport, and much more dental work than those local quotes covered. I had it all done. No wonder my Lubbock neighbor had been using her for his dental work for years, and now you can visit Texas Tech's new Costa Rica campus nearby. If you want top dental work at affordable prices, learn more about Dr. Silvia Zuniga and Dental Care by clicking the banner at prattontexas.com. Finally, having your teeth fixed and beautiful can be affordable and even fun.
He's back and ready for more. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I received this email from the Texas Alliance for Life. Urgent alert. Urgent legislative alert. 4/11/2021. It's over the weekend. Urge Lieutenant Governor Patrick and your state senator, Senator Charles Perry, to oppose SB 917 because it will harm patients at the end of life. It says, call him. And I'm sure they sent this to people with other senators. It's Senator Brian Hughes' bill, SB 917. They claim at the Texas Alliance for Life, which I have long told you is a sham organization. Yeah, they're sort of they're pro-life and its leader is on some stuff, but not all the way across the board. They've become sort of a cover group for moderates to liberals. All you got to know is their biggest backer group behind them is the Texas Catholic, meaning Roman Catholic Conference of Bishops. I get frustrated because this stuff goes on for years and years. If you folks in Abilene recall that your rep, Susan King, as chairwoman of the health committee or medical committee, whatever it was called at the time in the House, was right in years ago when she was in office, embroiled in this in her last term. And she made some good arguments. The problem is this issue hasn't gone away. And the more we've looked at it, the more we know that Texas Right to Life and others like Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor, Senator Charles Perry, Senator Hughes carrying the bill are correct. We've got a problem. These people at Texas Alliance for Life, again proving they're sort of a lukewarm sham pro-life organization, claims that this bill would set, quote, set back the pro-life movement 22 years on end-of-life care. No, we have a problem. We have a real problem in this state. They claim in their backgrounder that the bill eliminates a successful dispute resolution process that's existed in state law for 22 years. No, it replaces it with a new system that gives you, the patient, and others, when you're not able to speak for yourself, more due process and the ability to keep them from killing you off and denying treatment. This is a real problem. The last big case was the baby Tinsley case. By the way, that child is still alive. After they tried to kill her for years and years at that so-called children's hospital in Fort Worth. We have a real problem with this, and Texas Alliance for Life is showing its true colors here when it does not want to fix this problem and just carries the old corporate line that, oh, you know, these hospitals and doctors, they're just doing what's right for everybody. I mean, it's a good process. No, And Joe Poman over there at Alliance for Life, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. The dispute resolution process and all of it is bad. And it doesn't have the kind of, especially when you're under these life and death pressures, it does not give you or your designated representative the proper kind of due process to object or to even investigate why this committee of experts at a given hospital can just sit there and vote to say, oh, your wife, your daughter, your child, whatnot, your mom needs to be killed, needs to just be taken off life support. Even if you walk in there with tons of other medical opinions saying, no, there's real hope here, there's a real possibility. Oh, no, they don't have to listen to any of it. It needs reform, and Texas Alliance for Life is completely wrong, and they need to butt out on that. By the way, speaking of things that make you mad, there was a piece at Texas Scorecard by Iris Poole the end of the week saying border wall bill could be dead in the Texas House. Brian Slayton, a freshman, filed HB 2862 to let the state finish the border wall, and then it requires the governor to obtain reimbursement from the feds, you know, if he can. It was referred to the House State Affairs Committee, but Slayton says it could die there. He said, and this is Friday, he said, in the last 48 hours, I've been told by Chairman Patty of State Affairs, Chris Patty, that our bill to have Texans finish the border wall will not be receiving a hearing this session. And that's it. That's the tyranny of our committee system in our legislature that needs massive overhaul. Because one committee chairman can simply decide there's no way for other members to have a discharge petition by vote. You could have every member of the committee for the bill, except Republican and Democrat alike, except the chairman, and it can never get a hearing. And that's not a republic. It's a tyranny down at certain levels in our legislature, and it's terrible. It needs serious reform. All right, this bugs the thunder. You know, I've got all these other stories that legislature, you're going to find this frequent right now. The legislature is going to take up so much of our time a lot of days because it's crunch time. They finally get to work on stuff. There was a, I'm sorry, I get indecisive because these are all fairly big stories. Lawmakers hear bond reform bills addressing revolving door at the courthouse. We're talking about bail when people get arrested. House Criminal Jurisprudence Committee heard testimony on two controversial, story by Hayden Sparks at the Texan.news. Two controversial pieces of legislation designed to make it more difficult for violent criminals to be granted pretrial release. House Joint Resolution 4 by Kat Casale of College Station's proposed constitutional amendment that would give wide latitude to judges to deny bail to defendants who they determine to be flight risks or dangerous to the public. The bill requires judges to deny bail for capital murder defendants and those accused of sexual violence against a person under 17 years old unless, quote, clear and convincing evidence is offered to justify granting bail. Then there's HB 20 by Muir and named the Damon Allen Act I mentioned last week about the DP named after the DPS officer who was killed by an individual said to be on pretrial release. It sets up a state-funded risk assessment tool that judges are able to use when making bail decisions. David Slayton used to be at Lubbock County. He's the administrative director for the Texas Office of Court Administration, testified as a neutral witness on HJR 4. That judges in Texas do not have a mechanism available to them to deny pretrial release to violent individuals. Quote, there's really no way under our current law to keep people who are dangerous, and judges know that, in jail without a constitutional amendment to allow it, Slayton said. If Osama bin Laden would have been arrested in Texas on September 12, 2001, a Texas judge could not have denied him bail if he was charged only with murder or with robbery or a sexual offense against a child. He emphasized that if those people have money, they will get out. Well, but then the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association guy, John Convery, makes the right point. He says this in some ways can crush the presumption of innocence. It's a big crack in the system we can't put back together. You got a Republican criminal court judge in Harris County for 20 years who's now off the bench, Michael Fields, saying this isn't needed. He says holding people without bail violates our Constitution, and they're right. This is a real problem, and it's an area where we've got to come to some kind of middle ground on, and I'm not sure what the answer is. The Crime Stoppers guy from Houston, Andy Kahn, points out that this has been a real big problem. And since 2018 in Houston, 106 individuals who were murdered by defendants who had forfeited their bonds or who courts had released on multiple bonds and no bail felony bonds. One of the interesting things in this bill is, do Texas courts have, even if they have, we pass it and make it where judges can make these judgment calls more easily, do we have the resources to investigate? Some of the testimony was that the federal court system has a much better, more robust system of investigating people for whether they should be released on bail or not. This is a tough problem. I mean, certainly when people are violent and they have a long rap sheet and things like that, it doesn't mean they're guilty of the crime that they're currently charged on. But on the other hand, it does give us some information about that person, and maybe judges should be able to act on that. Of course, if you're falsely accused, what you don't need to be sitting in jail. There is a presumption of innocence. We'll see how this works out, but doing it right can help the courts have better judgment. Doing it wrong, I think, could be a real cost to our civil liberties. Back in a moment, and yes, with more from the legislature right here on Pratt on Texas. Stay with us.
More from the True Texan Studio after this.
An important message about protecting life from Elizabeth and Dustin Burroughs.
Did you hear that 23 cities in Texas have now outlawed abortion? If they can do it, why hasn't Lubbock?
Well, Lubbock can. We have a chance to protect life on May 1st by becoming the next sanctuary city for the unborn.
I'm just shocked that Lubbock isn't already a sanctuary for life.
Well, that's why Senator Charles Perry, myself, and many pro-life advocates supported a City of Lubbock election on May 1st.
It seems we must defend the unborn in Lubbock, so what else can we do?
Well, we all have to show up to vote on May 1st. We have to pass this ordinance.
We in Lubbock know the value of life.
That's why Elizabeth and I are proud to join so many churches, pastors, and other people of faith in supporting this election on May 1st. You can learn more on my website at burrows4tx.com. That's burrows, the number 4, tx.com. God bless you, God bless the unborn, and please go vote for life on May 1st. Political ad paid for by Burroughs for Texas.
Listening to Pratt should be required for all politicians and students. Remember, the learning never stops. Now, more Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back. I've got three stories here all on ERCOT and the and bills about it. I don't like this bill from Senator Kelly Hancock that would give power companies with the debt from the blackout access to government loans, bond money. It would be at a price higher than the market interest rate. And he's right on why that's true. I think this is just trying to do something that really doesn't need to be done. I think there are other solutions to that. It's a really big piece. Again, Brad Johnson at the Texan.news. They're doing all the good work out of the legislature. Well, they and some others, but very good work out of the legislature. So I don't really like Hancock's bill. But then there's this other piece at the Texas Tribune. ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, is suing to argue in court to try to settle this issue that it is quasi-government or government and has sovereign immunity, because they got a lot of lawsuits pending against them. So no surprise there. And then just to remind you that Democrats are still Democrats and they're not going to change, here's a piece from their big lefty, the Daily Signal in Texas. Advocacy groups, including Workers Defense Action Fund, the ACLU of Texas, and Move Texas, gathered in a virtual town hall Thursday to make noise for the Power Act, a bill that would provide between $1,000 to $2,500 to Texans affected by the February snowstorm. And you don't believe us when we talk to you about how climate change is just a vehicle for leftism? Part of climate policy making is also our response to climate emergencies and the relief that people need, said this Houston advocacy organizer with Move Texas. And they would rob the money out of our rainy day fund, make us hand it out to people. That's right. Here's the headline. Activists push for bill offering direct payments to Texans hurt by freeze. It's carried by State Rep Anna Hernandez. It's not going to pass. Mike Siegel, who ran for Congress as a Democrat, he's a political director for one of these groups. He says, it's not fair that Texans suffered while power companies made profits. Now, notice the other bills we're talking about are all about people going bankrupt, power companies. But it's just the same old crap you get from Democrats. So, Oh, and there was a good piece by James Barragan in the Dallas Morning News. I mean, he's a liberal-leaning, but the whole point of the story, well, the headline is a good headline because it sums the story. It's a long story. How much fraud is okay? In voter fraud debate, Republicans have a Trump card. That's not a play on words with Trump, although I'm sure it was meant. You know, they can sit here and talk about how rare it is and everything. All you got to do is ask him back, how much voter fraud is okay? And they talk to some political experts and say, this has been a problem for Democrats for a very long time. They can't answer this anywhere at any time. Because it's a failure thing to try to bring up and say, well, some fraud's okay. How much fraud is okay? Well, these corporate leaders, there was a big piece. Oh, where do I have that? I may not get to my border stack today. Where is that? Oh, by the way, Congressman Crenshaw, you know, with the eye patch, lost his sight defending our country. He's lost his sight in his other eye. He had emergency eye surgery. And announced he'll be off the grid for several weeks. It said the surgery went well, but I'll be effectively blind for about a month. He noticed some blurry spots in his vision, went to the ophthalmologist last week, and they immediately did surgery. Remember, he lost the sight in the other eye from the blast in Afghanistan. So we wish him well. Where is that? Oh, good grief. Now, see, I'm going to sit here and waste time. 100-plus corporate leaders meet to plot opposition to election security measures, a report. This is a story at the Daily Wire. And it says that more than 100 of these people, CBS News reported leaders from American Airlines, United Airlines, Levi Strauss. Levi's has always been a far lefty company in the last 50 years. Walmart, that's surprising. Viacom, CBS, Ariel Investments, LinkedIn, Twitter, AMC Theaters, and others were invited to a leftist event. And they're all signing up. You got a former CEO of American Express and a CEO of Merck and Company and all this trying to pressure all these people into signing statements against our voter integrity laws. Because I guess they believe that a certain amount of ballot fraud is okay. I guess that's the position of these companies. A certain amount of ballot fraud is okay, even if that cancels out the votes of minorities and others that they claim to protect. All right. I can skip that. That special election in Texas 23. There's nothing really that I need to share with you on that in Fort Worth. It's just going to be a big election. George, I was talking about this P. Bush, where George P. Bush, the land commissioner, says he's seriously considering running against Paxton in the Republican primary to be attorney general. Now, it's not as if he's been any kind of record-setting, you know, brilliant lawyer or anything where he's trying to run on the, oh, there's all these allegations. And remember, that's all they are, allegations against Paxton. And I went into detail, not in complete detail, but let's put it this way. I generically reminded you that P. Bush has had the same stuff in his own term as land commissioner, where he suppressed an audit of his office that was highly critical. It related to the Alamo stuff and all of that. Whistleblowers in his own agency leaked it to the press. In other words, it parallels these gripes against Ken Paxton. But he's out saying, well, it's about integrity and character that matters, and that's why I may run. Well, this story by Gromer Jeffers Jr. at the Dallas Morning News proves my prediction exactly right, that the press will carry water for George P. Bush. Sure, they're going to, folks. Do you understand how this works? I said it's the McCain syndrome. He's a liberal Republican in a Republican state. They'd rather have them in a conservative, especially a full-throated, hard-fighting conservative like Ken Paxton. So they'll destroy Ken Paxton, which they've been trying to do ever since he got elected over Dan Branch in that runoff, the former, you know, state rep, moderate Republican out of Dallas. Dallas Morning News been the paper leading the charge most of the time against Paxton. Anyway, they'll promote him, and then, of course, once he's the nominee, if the Democrats put up somebody good, it'll just be all over for him. It's the McCain syndrome, because then they'll start telling you how he's done all the similar stuff and what a hypocrite he is. And this story proved it. You go through the whole story by Gromer, who's a pretty good writer. The headline, Can George P. Bush Beat Ken Paxton for Texas AG in the Donald Trump-loving GOP? And it all goes into all the problem with Paxton and, wow, his career still thrives. Oh, he's won people over. Oh, he's really good. And, you know, not in a complimentary way. I'm saying, oh, he survived these so-called scandals. A lot of them are just allegations by people that have never been proven by anything, and they won't let him have his day in court either. But what does it do about George P. Bush? Does it mention any of the scandals he's had? No, it says P. Bush has done an adequate job separating himself from his family's disgust of Trump, but challenging Paxton could force voters to examine whether Bush is loyal to Trump or his family. How about this paragraph? Now in his second term as Texas Land Commissioner, Bush's political career has been a success, though the popularity of Abbott and Patrick's kept him in the backdrop of Texas politics. No mention of all this, the Alamo scandal, all of it, or the internal actual administrative scandal, or the firing all the people that knew how to handle the hurricane relief money so he could make room for his politically homeless friends that didn't have jobs once Obama won and the Bushes, you know, all the staffers were out, and he fired all those people with experience. Remember, the former land commissioner went public with that. He fired all those staffers that knew how to do that home rebuilding stuff and then had trouble with that, fired them to make room for his political cronies. And then, of course, the suppressing the audit, all kinds of stuff. They won't mention this stuff, folks. Just proving me right. They're gonna champion him, try to get you behind him, because most people don't know the difference. And then, of course, like McCain style, then they'll destroy him afterwards if there's a better Democratic alternative. All right, Minneapolis and Democrat-run Portland still burning again. Nothing's changed there. It wasn't the fault of Trump. You can just look around and see that. A lot more going on in Austin. We'll have that for you in the next edition of Pratt on Texas. That's it for today, my friends. Long live liberty, long live Texas, and may God continue to bless us all. Adios, mis amigos.